Welcome to Speaking of Soy, a discussion about soy and human health, sponsored by the Soy Connection Health and Nutrition Newsletter and the United Soybean Board. Today's program focuses on the role that soy plays in feeding a hungry world. Jim Hershey, Executive Director of the World Initiative for Soy and Human Health, and Peter Golbitz, President of Agromeris, co-authored an article on that topic, which can be found in the Volume 24, Number 2 issue of the Soy Connection. Peter is our guest on the program today. Peter, providing enough food for the growing population is a hot topic right now. How significant is the problem, and what role does soy play in meeting the nutritional needs of the increasing population?
Well, the problem is really quite significant. You know, we live in a country of abundance, as do about 1 billion of the 7 billion people on the planet today. So we're not quite as in touch with what's happening in the rest of the world, but there are nearly a billion people in the world today who don't have enough food to lead a healthy life. And most of that are in developing countries. Asia is the continent with the most hungry people in the world in terms of number, but sub-Saharan Africa has the highest percentage of hungry people. About 1 in 4 people in Africa are hungry. So as far as the role that soy can play, in the developing world, soy can play 2 major roles. It can be used as a direct human food, so it can be consumed as a dry legume or a bean. It can be milled into a high-protein flour, soy flour. And, of course, it can be used to make soy milk, cultured soy milk products, and, of course, tofu. You can also use some relatively low-cost technology, even something as simple as roasting, to make soybeans available as a feed source, a high-protein feed for animals. And you can also use simple processing methods like extrusion expelling to make a high-protein meal and a vegetable oil, and that meal can be used to feed animals as well. And, of course, the vegetable oil is a high-quality oil that can be used for cooking. One of the keys in helping the world feed itself with soybeans are to show people how to grow soybeans. They can be grown virtually anywhere in the world where there's ample agricultural land and water, of course, and labor for the production. But also to teach them how to process whole soybeans. And if they can't grow them there, let's say they're in a very dry area, certainly soybeans can be imported. Dry soybeans have a very long shelf life and can be stored well for a long period of time. And then people can locally process them into a wide range of food products.
Now, what are some of the valuable attributes soybeans have that could help lead to its acceptance as a staple food source?
Well, soybeans are blessed with having the highest protein level of virtually any legume and just about any other plant source in production today. So they have about 40% protein and about 20% oil. So they can be considered an oil seed because of their high oil content, but they're considered more of a protein source because of their high protein. And it really is protein that's ultimately the most widely needed food in the world today. Protein is essential for children's development, for bone development, for brain development, for proper health, sustained energy. Without protein, essentially, people eat a lot of carbohydrates and a lot of fat, and they don't have the energy. They don't necessarily are able to develop their bodies in a way that will let them have productive adult lives. So its nutritional quality will help. On the other hand, it's extremely versatile. You know, I had mentioned in the article that I wrote that it's a chameleon in many ways, and that most soy products have relatively low amounts of flavor themselves, but then can be used in a variety of food applications. You can make traditional foods with them. So, for example, in Asia, soy foods are widely consumed as their traditional food product. It could be tofu or soy milk or tempeh. And then in the developing world, where maybe they're not so familiar with soybeans, they can be used as textured soy proteins. It can go into meat products. It can be used as a meat alternative. So there's a lot of ways it can be added to traditional diets, or it can bring in a whole new wave of food products.
Well, the use of soy in daily diets varies around the world, with Asia being the largest consumer. So what is the main difference in the way Asians and Americans consume soy foods?
Well, it's interesting. It is true that Asians are the largest consumers of soy. They have been eating soy and as part of their diet in many parts of Asia, particularly China, for 3,000 years at this point. So they're very used to having soy foods in the traditional manner. So, for example, in China, they'll make soy milk in the morning in their kitchen the same way most Americans will make coffee in the morning. They've got either, they either do it stovetop or they have a little soy milk machine that makes handy soy milk for them and their family. They like to drink it warm, and it's a major part of how they start their day. They also eat a tremendous amount of tofu. Tofu is usually consumed virtually every day. There are other products such as yuba, which is the skin that forms on top of simmering soy milk. That's widely consumed in China and in Japan. There's a lot of fermented foods that are made with soybeans or tofu. And the fermented foods play a couple of essential roles. One is the virtue of their being fermented extends their shelf life. It also helps to make the product more digestible, changes the flavor, changes the application. You can have a paste and make a soup base from miso, for example. And they provide some important probiotics as well into the diet. So Asians will consume foods in their traditional way. Americans, although they like tofu and soy milk, in fact, we're large soy consumers, most Americans prefer the more Americanized products. That can be a burger, a soy burger, just a veggie burger. They like chicken-like patties. And on soy milk, you know, the Asians like what we would call the beany flavor of soy milk. The Asians just consider it the natural flavor of soy milk. In the U.S., we want our soy milk to taste more like cow's milk. So the soy milk that we consume in the supermarket usually has a little sugar and a little flavor added to it to make it closer to cow's milk. So we like it in our familiar Americanized forms. Asians preferred in their traditional Asian forms.
Discuss the role that soy plays in world markets and how consumption varies from country to country.
Well, on an annual basis, about 85% of the world production of soy is processed directly into animal feed and vegetable oil. So this is what drives the world market for soy. This is why there's more production coming online in South America and in Africa. That production is going primarily to feeding a growing need for animal feed and for vegetable oil. So that drives the world market. As far as on a country-to-country basis, the Asian markets consume the vast majority of the soybeans that are used directly as food. For example, if we look at per capita disappearance in Asian countries, we see that China, each person will consume about 8 kilograms a year of soybeans. And in Indonesia, it may be 11 kilograms per person. And in Japan, maybe 8 kilograms per person. So those are typical numbers for Asia, somewhere between, let's say, 8 kilograms and 12 kilograms per person per year. And in the U.S., we eat less than 0.5 kilogram per person per year. So we have a lot of other proteins that we choose that we traditionally have consumed, meat proteins and dairy proteins. And in Asia, they don't eat a lot of dairy proteins. They are eating more meat these days because the economies are developing, but still a lot of the Asian diet is a plant-based protein diet.
The market for soy-based protein is also growing as a sustainable alternative food source. Do you see this becoming a significant option in the world marketplace?
Certainly. Soybeans are produced on a large scale globally. We produce about a third of the world's soybeans, and about half the world's soybeans are produced in South America and Brazil and Argentina. So soybeans are produced around the world, and because they are available in such large quantities, they are relatively low cost. And in fact, they're probably the lowest cost, highest quality protein available from any source. So when you talk about sustainability, one of the key issues is the amount of protein you can actually get per acre. You can get a lot more high quality protein per acre growing soybeans than you can if you commit that land to animal production or dairy production. So from a feeding the world on a sustainable basis, there's a lot more bang for the buck when you grow a high quality plant protein such as soybeans. So from a sustainability perspective, that's one key. The other is that soybeans are grown sustainably. They are able to be grown year after year, usually on rotation with corn and nitrogen fixing corn and some other crops, possibly on a three crop rotation. It's a very efficient crop to grow. And as I mentioned earlier, it can be grown virtually anywhere in the world by smallholder farmers, or it can be grown on a large scale, such as it is in the U.S. or South America.
Well, how do you see consumer focus shifting with the rising discussions of sustainability and increased acceptance of plant-based foods as the main source of protein?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we in the developing world have kind of this luxury of having a lot of proteins available to us and having going to the store and finding foods of all kinds available to us. And in fact, we spend far less on our earned dollar for food in the U.S. than most of the world does. So, for example, we might spend 15 cents per dollar that we earn on food, whereas in Africa, it could be 60 or 70% of the dollar we earn has to go on food. That has to do with the high cost of food, but also with the relatively low wages available in the rest of the world. So we have the luxury when we go to the store of saying, well, I want a sustainable food. I want something sustainably raised. I want something organic. I want something that's plant-based. I want something that's gluten-free, you know, whatever the particular choice is. And that's a choice that most of the world does not have. It's really up to the marketers, though. The food marketers are the ones who will either develop the product or promote the product as a sustainable food product or grown in a sustainable manner. And that's attractive to many consumers. And as well, the plant-based proteins is another very positive message. People equate plant-based with friendlier to the earth, friendlier to the body. There's no cholesterol in plant-based food products. They're healthier for me. They have fiber. It's been recommended that I eat more vegetables and I eat more plant-based proteins. So we have that choice here in the U.S. As far as in the developing world, we truly need to teach people in the developing world how to produce and process their own food. Yes, we can export food to the developing world, whether it's raw materials or packaged goods, but ultimately the regional production and regional processing is going to be what makes these foods widely available and thus more sustainable for them. They won't be looking at it as, oh, this is plant-based. They're just looking at it and saying, this is protein, this is good. This is nutritious. This makes me feel good. And it's low cost. Ultimately, those are the messages the developing world needs to hear when it comes to some of these foods.
I want to thank Peter Golbitz, president of Agromeris, for taking the time to be with us today. Speaking of soy, a discussion about soy and human health has been brought to you by the Soy Connection Health and Nutrition Newsletter and the United Soybean Board. You can find more on this topic in the Volume 24, Number 2 issue of the Soy Connection Newsletter. Visit the Newsletters and Tools section at soyconnection.com.